It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. 2 weeks ago, the CDC reported a third human case of avian influenza in the U.S., this time displaying respiratory symptoms. It's the same virus that did massive damage to poultry and wild birds in recent years.
All three cases involved dairy farm workers with exposure to infected cows, which have been reported in 9 states. It has not yet been found in Wisconsin.
While the current public health risk is considered low by the CDC, researchers and public health officials are working to prevent the virus from spreading to more cows and more people in the future.
That includes researching how the virus shows up in milk from infected cows. Last month, researchers at UW-Madison provided new evidence that pasteurization of milk is effective at killing the avian flu virus.
Keith Polson was involved in that research as director of the Wisconsin Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory. He's also a clinical associate professor in the Medical Sciences Department at the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. Keith, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right, now this nasty avian flu has been around for a while in birds, chickens, most devastating when it comes to livestock. Now circulating in dairy herds here and there around the country, a few humans. How is this virus showing up differently in these different mammal species?
It's a great question. You know, it's the same H5N1 strain that's been circulating in our wild migratory birds and then affecting domestic poultry now since 2022. It's actually the worst foreign animal disease outbreak in U.S. history, although it's very, very different when you look at poultry versus mammals. So at first, it was domestic poultry, which had a very high mortality rate. We were seeing upwards of 100% of bird flocks dying. And then as more migratory birds were found dead and they were being scavenged by different mammalian species, they were dying, but they were dying of more of central neurologic disease. So it's very different than the respiratory, what we consider with influenza. And then back in the early part of 2024 is when we noticed it in dairy cows, which don't have neurologic disease and they don't have respiratory disease. They get mastitis, which is very, very different than any of our other species.
What is it that makes a virus manifest so radically differently from one mammal species to another?
Yeah, different mammals have different receptors. They also have different immune systems. So, you know, the cows and the carnivores, you know, the carnivores are eating tissue, so they're being more viremic. Versus our cows, they're probably being spread. We need more information, but it's probably being spread from cow to cow through the milking apparatus or equipment, because cows shed most of their virus in their milk, and most of the virus is localized in the udder.
Speaking of milk, you've been doing some research lately on pasteurizing milk, subjecting it to different heat conditions. What are we learning about what that does to this virus when it's present in milk?
Yeah, so that was just published recently in the New England Journal of Medicine with the Yoshi Kuoka group and with some assistance with our Food Research Institute. And what we found is that pasteurization by far and away is very, very effective. But really, the other thing we found is that with raw milk product, flu likes cold and wet. So in the refrigerator, raw milk that's contaminated with influenza will remain viable for an extended period of time, which is another reason why we shouldn't be consuming raw milk for our general public.
Now, I'll flag at this point, as I understand it, we haven't detected this in any Wisconsin dairy cattle as of this conversation. Am I right on that?
Yep, that's okay. Correct. Yeah.
Now, that said, as we look to the future, dairy processors might, as I understand it, do different things with milk. Pasteurizing that milk we're going to drink out of a bottle might look one way. Getting ready for cheese, the temperature conditions might be different. What kind of things do we need to know if, again, this starts showing up in Wisconsin?
Well, in that case, you know, FDA is doing quite a bit of work, and there's a lot of different academic institutions that are looking at different ways that we process milk into our different products. Even, for instance, mozzarella cheese that goes on a frozen pizza is very different than fresh mozzarella cheese, because the cooking has different effects on the texture and the taste of that product. So I think as we're looking at that now in multiple different areas, whether it's surrogate viruses or finding affected milk on farm, it's kind of complicated because it's a select agent. But if and when it will become more widespread, we're going to see additional studies for each individual aspect. Now, One of the things I think that's very important is that we have some artisanal raw milk cheeses, which are aged, and they're aged over sometimes over a year. And those are the products that we really need more information on. We're pretty sure that the chemistry and the aging process for that those cheese making should make it absolutely safe, just like any other general pasteurized product. But we still need to do the work. Unfortunately, we can't do it in one day. We need to age them over months to years. So that's kind of one thing that we're working on now.
When it comes to monitoring, to find out if and when this this avian flu virus shows up in cattle here in Wisconsin, what are we doing? How do we keep on the lookout for this?
Good question. I think is if you see something, say something. It's a very, very complex issue nationally and even within our state. So right now we have federal mandates to move lactating cows between states or interstate movement. But we all recognize that we really need intrastate movement. So we really have a better understanding and a ability to do surveillance in our dairy herds, because we can't really institute control programs very well if we don't really know where the virus is. We know that there's a lot of virus out there, and we're very concerned that it could reach an endemic state or continuing to spread. So in Wisconsin, I think we'll see more programs. Right now, we see programs for testing in order to move intrastate lactating. And I do think over the time, June 3rd on Monday, we had a voluntary program to then start testing your bulk tank milk. I do see that coming where we'll have more mandated bulk tank milk surveillance. So we have a very good understanding of where the virus is in our nation's dairy herd.
Looking at the economics here for the dairy industry, for chickens, again, it seems like this thing spread fast. And as you mentioned, it could be 100% lethal to a flock that it hits. We're nowhere near either of those with cattle at this point, right?
Right. Yeah. So, you know, I don't want to discount the cows do get sick. It is a very select population of those cows. Usually it's second lactation or greater. So they're usually 3 to 4 years of age. And then they're mid to end lactation. So between 150 and maybe 300 days into their lactation, they do get sick. They go off feed, they drop in milk production, but we see a very small mortality, or cows tend not to die. Sometimes they have secondary infections, but that's even pretty rare. And herds tend to recuperate most of their production by 30 to 45 days after they start seeing it. Really, what we're more concerned about, very similar to our other animal agriculture like swine production, is that we don't want to introduce a virus that will end up developing what we call endemicity, or it's always in that population, and then it always becomes, whether it's a co-infection or it will have permanent long-term effects on milk production, reproduction, and then animal health and growth.
So if one of the main modes of transmissions appears to be milking machines, mm-hmm. right? Are there things we can do to limit the transmission via that vehicle?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's quite a bit of financial support to be able to do this. What it was announced in the middle of May, and then again now in June 3rd for our voluntary program and indemnity, is that the best way to stop this virus now is to not move it off the farm. So if I were a farmer in Wisconsin or any other affected state, or even in an affected state that I don't have this virus, is I would want to know what my biosecurity is for animals coming onto my farm and anything going off. That means all people, vehicles, products, you know, controlled access on and off the farm. And then if we do have flu or the virus on the farm, how are we segregating the populations of cows? That's easier said than done, just due to capacity issues on facilities. But we do know of the farms that are affected with virus, time period of a infection and having affected cows is much shorter if they're able to move cows into a different location and to isolate them. It's gold standard or best practices for infection control.
County fair season, state fair coming up, livestock comes from all over the state. Does this factor into that?
Well, really, remember, you're talking again about lactating cows. So that's really the population that we need to think about. And if I were showing lactating cows, I would be hyper-vigilant about what the connection is. I would have my own milking equipment. I would watch my cows very, very closely. We highly recommend that any sick animal does not travel to fairs or shows, and that can be very difficult. And there's veterinarians at those shows and county fairs. I personally work at World Dairy Expo to make sure that our cows from all over the country are healthy and safe. And we have a lot of infrastructure there and veterinary help and diagnostic tests that we can make informed decisions going forward. So the risk is there. There is a risk, although Wisconsin is lower because we don't have affected herds that we know of at this point. I'm hoping that that stays out because Wisconsin does not import a lot of lactating cows. We're not part of that business model that we do see spreading in other states. So hopefully we can stay virus-free, but if we do, we have a pretty intensive infrastructure to be able to manage it.
Keith, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Keith Polson is director of the Wisconsin Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory and a clinical associate professor in the Medical Sciences Department at the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. We talked to them about recent developments in the ongoing multi-state outbreak of avian flu in dairy cattle and new research on the safety of milk from infected cows. Now there's a federal effort to get vaccines ready for humans if the avian flu virus mutates in a way that leads to more transmission to people. Dr. Bill Hartman is an associate professor of anesthesiology and principal investigator for the UW-Madison COVID-19 clinical trials. Dr. Hartman, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Let's start with the idea of getting some vaccines ready in case this particular avian flu becomes more of a worry in humans. Can you talk through why we're making these vaccines, why we're getting them ready now?
Well, if we learned anything from the previous pandemic, it's that we have to be more prepared. We have to be ready. And especially if we've been giving sort of warning signs that something is coming. We didn't really have that with COVID, but we do have that with bird flu. And so we know that this virus is present. We know that it's actively trying to jump into humans. And so we have a little bit of time. We should be able to get these vaccines prepared and ready so that if we have to move quickly, if we have to get vaccines to the general public, we should be able to do it much quicker than we did during COVID.
What is our starting point for developing a vaccine like this? We have a lot of flu vaccines already. Are we going from 0 to 60 or 50 to 60 to get up to speed on this?
So I think that we've got a good head start already. So the national pre-pandemic influenza vaccine stockpile, which keeps kind of a total of whatever flu strains are in the community, they actually have had four types of the H5N1 candidate viruses within the stockpile. And so having those attenuated viruses ready to go really gives us a step in the right direction. Only two of those viruses are probably going to be effective against the H5N1 that's infected the cattle and jumped into humans at this point. But that should give us pretty solid protection if we need it and when we need it.
How long would it be from now until we had a stockpile ready to start distributing, maybe to farm workers and others most potentially exposed?
Right. So we have about 5 million of these vaccines that are currently being bottled and ready for distribution. Obviously, we'll need many millions more than that. If we're starting to have to vaccinate the general public or even just farm workers. And so that will probably take, 3 or 4 months to manufacture these vaccines and distribute them. And even then, we're talking probably about 100 million vaccines that we can get out in that time. These vaccines are not always, they don't induce always the strongest immune response. And so it's likely going to be a two-dose vaccine. So even with 100 million vaccines, we're talking about being able to vaccinate only about 50 million people with the current vaccination program that we have in place.
Where we are right now, as I understand it, is just a few people confirmed to have this particular avian flu. Symptoms, happily, pretty minor so far. What are some of the signals that you'd watch for to say, either this is becoming more common being transmitted to humans and it's becoming more dangerous? Where are the tipping points?
Well, I think that there's a couple things. First of all, you know, avian flu has probably been around for since the early 2000s in that form that we've been able to kind of watch and follow. And every time it's jumped into another animal from a chicken or a bird into another mammal, it's kind of died out. At this point, that hasn't happened. It has moved its way into cattle, and then it's moved its way into humans. Granted, just three humans with confirmed cases. So the fact that it is showing this pattern where it's not dying out in these particular mammals, it's continuing to spread amongst them, that is one thing that we have to keep an eye on, because that's different than how it's acted before. The other thing that we really want to keep an eye on is the fact that the first two patients with confirmed bird flu had conjunctivitis or pink eye, very mild, and recovered relatively quickly. This third case, this patient has developed more of a pneumonia from flu. It's more common to what we would see with influenza. And so when it gets into the lungs, it may be able to spread a lot easier through a person's speech or coughing or sneezing. And so this is something that has me a little bit concerned this week, that it's mutated to this point, that it could do that. But thus far, we're not seeing any more spread beyond that single person. But certainly, because this virus is changing, because this virus is showing an ability to get to humans and change it the way that it's going to infect humans, we have to keep an eye on it, and we have to be ready to go ahead and protect, especially our farm workers, if we get to that point.
You mentioned the comparison with COVID, which spread so quickly, before we could respond to it in many ways. How much benefit is there in having this, at this point, slow motion prequel, hopefully prequel to nothing, but to have this advanced look at this illness?
As long as we're not ignoring it, I think it's a very beneficial time period that we have at this point. The fear is that because it's only infected three people to this point, that, you know, we're not keeping as close an eye on things as we probably should. But I think those of us that are concerned, those of us that have our antennas up, we like having this time period so that we can get things in place. Even if it means being able to provide goggles or other PPE to our dairy farm workers here in Wisconsin, just to keep them good and safe, it's nice to have this time so we can get that supply, so we can get them out to the people that need to be protected.
Dr. Hartman, thanks again for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you again for having me.
Dr. Bill Hartman is an associate professor of anesthesiology and principal investigator for the UW-Madison COVID-19 clinical trials. We talked to him about the potential role of vaccines in mitigating the public health risk of avian influenza.